Evelyn, Section 1. Rain fell through the night. The ground would be soft, easy to dig. This seems my last chance to plant the hyacinths before winter freezes the earth. In retirement, I can do things like drive 50 miles to a cemetery on a whim. I collect the gardening tools, the mail order bulbs, and the items the internet lists for clearing lichen from limestone without scratching the soft surface. The freeway exit curves down into the river valley toward Main Street. Mound Cemetery overlooks the valley from a hilltop south of town. Nearing the first access road to the graveyard, I pass the groundskeeper riding a lawnmower. I was hoping the rain would keep him away. He recently reset Evelyn's monument after I found it sunken and listing. And I wanted to thank him, but not have to explain why I'm digging into the ground. Cemetery rules permit pole planters only, not pots or vases or other obstructions to mowing. But the hyacinths would bloom and be gone long before the grass needs cutting next spring. Midway down the second access road, I step out of the car listening for the mower. I carry the tools and the bulbs down a quiet row of monuments on a grassy slope that seemed a hill when I was a child. Section 2. Garden tools occupy my mother's hands, my sister and me, ages 4 and 6, trailing her along a row of tombstones. My father is carrying a tray of red geraniums from the trunk of the car to his parents' graves. Gumshoe to spade, he cuts into the sod while my mother unpots the geraniums. My sister races me uphill to the spigot located under the cedar trees. We lug the watering can back to the gravesite, cold splashes splatting our shoes. The geraniums get a good soaking, and with the surplus water, my mother washes the granite of bird droppings, cut grass, and black dirt. A third monument stands straight as a sentry next to Grandma's gravestone flush with the ground. Simple corner curlicues in the gray limestone frame the sans serif inscription. Evelyn Bollicky, born April 14, 1906, died April 28, 1910. "Who's Evelyn?" I ask my mother. "Daddy's sister," she says vaguely, collecting the tools. "She died before he was born." "How old was she?" 2. Not yet skilled in big number subtraction, and at an age when I still think my mother infallible, I miss her error. Nothing more is said. My father is waiting against the car, smoking a cigarette. We leave, without tending Evelyn's grave. Section 3. After my parents died, the urge to visit my hometown came over me time and again. I'd drive the 50 miles from my city apartment through farmland and prairie and down into the river valley, where I'd spend an hour or two back in time. On one visit, a small sign reading Museum caught my attention. I followed the arrow to 3rd Street and Reisdorf, which was the site of the old Union School, a 2-story limestone in Confederate gray set back against the wooded hillside of the valley. Disused since the early 1950s, the building was selected in recent years to house local historic ephemera and paraphernalia. I spent the rest of the afternoon searching musty photographs for familiar faces, and with the help of the round red-headed volunteer, scanning newspapers on microfilm for familiar names. 2 days later, a manila envelope arrived by mail from the volunteer. It contained a photocopy, 3 inches of vintage print from the Le Sueur News. In the margin, she had scrawled, May 5th, 1910. The little 4-year-old daughter, Evelyn, of Mr. and Mrs. John Bollicky, died Thursday last about noon of measles. The little child was first taken ill with scarlet fever, but it was not recognized as such for several days, as a mild form of measles was prevalent in the city, and it was thought this was the same trouble. Later, a fever was found to prevail, and a physician was called. From that time until death occurred, the little child was always in precarious condition. Pneumonia set in, and that was followed toward the end with measles. In all, the illness lasted nearly 3 weeks, and throughout, Mr. and Mrs. Balicki were under quarantine regulations, so that little could be offered them by way of help by friends. The internment was from the home Friday afternoon. Reverend Potthoff of the German M.E. Church being in charge. The sympathy of all go out to Mr. and Mrs. Balicki in the time of trouble, which to them has been a heavy one. Evelyn, I read the story again and again, trying to take it in. The detail of the narrative, the tenderness of the telling, sympathetic but unsentimental, moved me. Section 4. In the year 1910, the Minnesota State Board of Health reported 284 deaths in 1,150 cases of scarlet fever, the majority of which were children. Chicago physician Ludwig Hectone described the illness in the 1910 Board of Health pamphlet, Scarlet Fever. Scarlet fever is an easily transmitted and widely spread preventable disease characterized by sudden onset with fever, vomiting, sore throat, and a general scarlet rash, followed by a prolonged scaling of the skin. Dangerous complications are likely to occur in mild cases that have not been watched carefully and treated properly. The greatest danger is in secondary infections, which occur in practically every case caused by the common germ Streptococcus. Cases increase October to May. It is not a flying machine. It spreads because a child comes in contact with a child or touches things belonging to a child who has it or had it. The germs remain alive for months or years if protected from air and light in the folds of blankets, the wrinkles of clothing, the pages of books. Images came to me. The mother at the child's bed, the father coming and going, the doctor arriving, his worn black bag. The parents' fear and desolation without the comfort of friends. I imagine Evelyn, her flour sack print dress, brandishing stick dolls with her younger cousin, whose rash and persistent fever earlier that month no one mentioned. I imagine Evelyn waking near dawn, whimpering, coughing, hot to the touch. Grandma takes her into their bed, Grandpa having left to cart fuel to farmers. The child sleeps fitfully, radiating heat. Grandma treats her with Epsom salts, a basin of water, a soft cloth. She holds a cup to Evelyn's lips. Trying to swallow, the child cries out. Nothing stays down, not even weak tea. The fever continues for several days. Flushed cheeks camouflage the rash. When the doctor is called at last, he diagnoses the illness and prescribes Vaseline for Evelyn's scaly skin. He tacks to the wood of the front door a rose-colored tagboard sign. Quarantine. Scarlet fever. I imagine fresh bread and cookies wrapped in brown paper tied with string and left on the porch. Through a door in the ground, cousins enter the root cellar, shelve away from the light, jars of tomatoes, applesauce, stewed rhubarb. Friends send notes with the doctor to Grandma. Leave the laundry on the back step Wednesday. George will fetch. Cousin Flora, two houses south on Fifth Street, tills Grandma's garden for May planting. Congestion swamps Evelyn's chest. Infection thickens her throat. Grandpa resumes his fuel deliveries as quarantine allows. If he stays with the horse and cart, officials discern, contamination is low risk. Farmers rely on the fuel, and Grandpa and Grandma depend on the pay. Only activity adjusts Grandpa's mood, while some spirit collects Grandma's fears and holds them at bay. Time collapses and passes indistinctly. There is no past and no eternity. There is only the caring for Evelyn all her days. On April 21, 1910, the local section of Le Sueur News includes the following item. We understand that John Bollocky, who was elected to the position of marshal at the session of the council, will not occupy the same. On Thursday, 14 days after Evelyn's fourth birthday, Grandpa returns from his morning deliveries just before noon. He stands near the bedroom door, slouching against the wall. The child's breathing, labored and noisy overnight, has changed to quick, whispered exhales, telling Grandpa the end is near. Grandma is bedside, holding Evelyn's slight hand. It's a fine spring day. The young willow, its tarragon leaves and caterpillar sprouts like mist in the morning light. From somewhere high above the house, a mourning dove's song. A sweet, cooling breeze slips through the open window and into the bedroom. Seeming suddenly summoned, Grandma stands in a pane of noonday light and bends over Evelyn, as if to adjust her pillow. Instead, she rests her head on the child's now still chest. A moan escapes from somewhere deep in Grandma, drawing Grandpa to her side. Section 5. Who handles the bedding Evelyn last touched? What becomes of her dresses, worsted stockings, and soft button shoes? I imagine Grandma busying herself, while Grandpa sees to the size and shape of the gravestone. He takes from his pocket the piece of paper on which is printed the proper spelling of Evelyn's name and the dates which state the numerical record of her life, birth to death. Every cut in the stone increases the cost, but he spares no expense, spending cash he doesn't have, adding tenderness to stone, the curlicues at the corners. On May 5th, the local section of Le Sueur News. Mr. and Mrs. John Bollocky wish to thank all who assisted them during the recent illness of their little daughter, and fully appreciate the kindness shown them at all times. And then what fills the space empty of Evelyn's voice? How often do they visit the gravesite? Do they plant flowers? I imagine Grandma grieving but stoic, bearing quietly the loss, and Grandpa, commonly cranky, softening under the sorrow. But probably it wasn't that way. More likely he puts on a face for town folk and customers, while impatient and sharp-tongued with his wife. I can't stay here doing nothing, he says. On May 12, 1910, the local section of Le Sueur News includes this item. By ballot, John Bollocky was elected street commissioner at $3 per day for teamwork and $1 per day for handwork. Section 6. I have but a few memories on which to base my imaginings. Grandpa died when I was 2½, and Grandma 3 years later. I remember the frail frame house at Fifth Street and Smith, a gaping knothole in the weeping willow, the willow's old roots buckling the sidewalk. I remember the cooing of a nameless mourning dove seeming to issue from the knothole of the tree and stirring a fluttering within my chest. Grandpa and Grandma were slight and bent like old bicycle frames, twice the age they were at Evelyn's death. I remember Grandma's thin ankles, thick hose, and chunk heel shoes next to me. Without toys of my own at Fifth Street and Smith, I emptied the sewing basket onto the worn linoleum floor. Spools of yarn, thimbles, a darning glass, azure blue, which to this day catches the light in my northeast window. "You're such a little nuisance," Grandma said, her voice gravelly, accented. She had emigrated Germany at age 13. Grandpa's crooked finger beckoned me. I followed his black suit coat and white hair to his desk. He took from the cubbyhole a shiny paper, unwrapped a chocolate square, and offered it to me. The next May, he died by suicide in his Model T, the engine idling, the garage door closed. I remember the swirls stitched in the mortuary carpet and the fragrance of carnations. Evelyn's obituary had come to me out of the blue, a shock, as if I'd known her always, and now she was gone. I did what one does in sudden loss. I called a friend. "But you know," she said, having listened and sympathized, "the death of children was commonplace back then." The more frequent the experience, the less the impact, she seemed to suggest. Death as aversion therapy. Feeling corrected for sentimentality, I agreed with her. Section 7. It looks like the lawnmower recently rough-cut the corner of Evelyn's monument. Running my fingers over the limestone, I wonder for the first time about Evelyn herself. Was she fine-boned and long-limbed like me? I have no photograph. Did she observe more often than speak? Did she delight in the garden, the arc of the bleeding hearts, and in the brown paper-jacketed gooseberries, but spurn their taste? Did she, as I did, page through "This is the house that Jack built," the only picture book on Grandma's shelf? The groundskeeper didn't show up at the gravesite after all, but neither did things go as I'd planned. Since the water spigot had been turned off for the season, I couldn't clear Evelyn's monument of lichen without scratching the limestone. The planting instructions suggested mixing compost with the hyacinth bulbs, but I'd left my concoction of rotting leaves in the car, and I was loath to stir the groundskeeper's attention by retrieving it. In the end, I didn't even measure the trough I dug for planting, but in haste eyeballed what seemed to be 3 inches in depth. A worm wiggled out of a lump of dirt. I took a fist of the small bulbs from the envelope. How weightless they felt in my hand. A tidy row of 7 fit in the trench. How readily they released their delicate skins.